Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Agriculture Report and Science in the News, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again. It's time to learn and improve your American English with As It Is. We come to you 7 days a week, and you can always find all our programs as podcasts on the Internet. Today, we will tell you about politics in Indonesia. Voters there will soon choose a new president. We'll tell you what the experts are predicting. Then, news from the United States. Michelle Howard now has 4 stars on her Navy uniform. She is the second highest ranking officer in that important organization's long history. So that's what we have for you today as we go to Learning English School and find out about our world as it is. Now, on to part one. Indonesia is the world's 3rd largest democracy. On Wednesday, Indonesians will choose their president for the next 5 years. The election has 2 candidates. They are the governor of Jakarta, Joko Widodo, and former Army Special Forces Commander Prabowo Subianto. In recent months, Joko Widodo, or Jokowi as he is known in Indonesia, has lost support among likely voters. At one time, public opinion surveys showed him leading his opponent by 25 points. Now, the two men seem to be very close in the race for the presidency. Prabowo Subianto has put forward a strong campaign. Last week, some surveys showed him less than 3 points behind the Jakarta governor. Douglas Ramage is a longtime Indonesia observer. He now works for the Bauer Group Asia. He says the former commander has been preparing for the election for a long time.
Bear in mind, this is a presidential candidate who may be one of the most experienced presidential candidates in Asia. And so you think about, he's run for president 3 times in Indonesia, and he's gotten good at it.
A growing number of Indonesians have shown interest in the former general's well-organized campaign and his speeches about reclaiming Indonesia's resource wealth. But some people are worried about his activities as a military commander. Prabowo Subianto is accused of human rights abuses in East Timor. He has also been accused of ordering the kidnapping of pro-democracy activists in 1998 while he led the Army Special Forces. He has never faced charges in a civilian court. His critics fear that if he becomes president, he will cancel democratic freedoms that Indonesians have enjoyed since the fall of former President Suharto. Last week, the Wall Street Journal newspaper published an interview with the United States ambassador to Indonesia, Robert O. Blake. The ambassador said, "The U.S. government is not supporting any side in the presidential election." But he noted the government has urged Indonesia to investigate the reported rights abuses. His comments angered some Indonesian officials. They say it is unacceptable for the United States to become involved in Indonesia's national issues. Foreign Minister Marty Natalegawa called the comments a lapse of judgment that is difficult to accept. Alexius Jamadu is a political science professor at Pelita Harapan University on the Indonesian island of Java. He says the United States wants an Indonesian leader who will support American foreign policy and interests.
It is very clear that Prabowo's administration is going to be very nationalistic and might not be easy for the United States to invite Indonesia within the strategic calculation of the United States vis-a-vis Chinese rising at the moment.
Joko Widodo's popularity appears to have been hurt by questions about his religion and ethnicity. The Jakarta governor was forced to dispute reports that he is Christian or ethnic Chinese. Indonesia has the world's largest Muslim population. Experts say his campaign has suffered because he had to spend time denying the reports. But he is known for his populist leadership and opposition to corruption, qualities that appeal to some voters. The presidential election is an important step in the nation's democratic progress. It will be the first time power will be given from one elected leader to another. President Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono has served 2 terms in office and is barred from seeking a third. The United States Navy now has a woman as its second highest-ranking officer for the first time in its 236-year history. Michelle Howard was awarded the position of 4-star admiral last week. She received her 4th star in a ceremony at Arlington National Cemetery in Virginia.
If you don't believe today was a first, when I called to order 4-star shoulder boards for women, they didn't exist. A special contract was let, and you folks are seeing the first set in the history of the United States Navy.
Ana Mateo is here to tell us more.
Admiral Michelle Howard is beginning her new duties as Vice Chief of Naval Operations. Secretary of the Navy, Ray Mabus, was the one who promoted Ms. Howard.
The Navy picked the best officer to be the VCNO. That's the only thing that happened here today.
The promotion of Ms. Howard to 4-star admiral is historic. It is a promising sign for military women hoping to move up in a career traditionally dominated or controlled by men. But making history is something Admiral Howard has done all during her military career. Michelle Howard graduated from the U.S. Naval Academy in 1982, and since then, she has won many historic firsts in her career. She is the first African-American woman to gain 3-star rank in the U.S. Armed Forces. She is also the first African-American woman to command a naval ship. And now, she is the first woman to become an admiral in the Navy. Chief of Naval Operations Jonathan Greenert says the honor of being the Navy's first 4-star woman admiral means something else for Ms. Howard. He says that she is ready to set an example for many young women, or as he puts it, bear the burden of a role model.
She will bear the burden of a role model, and she is ready to bear that very well. And I'm very excited about that because we need lots more women in the Navy.
In her career, Ms. Howard has been a part of several important events in U.S. history. She was in the Pentagon, the Defense Department headquarters, on September 11, 2001, when terrorists crashed a plane into that building. And in 2009, Ms. Howard was part of the naval force sent to rescue the merchant ship Maersk Alabama and its captain, Richard Phillips. Somali pirates had kidnapped Captain Phillips from the ship, which carries the American flag. She says she was very new to her job when the incident took place.
It was about 3 days into the job when we got word that Captain Phillips had been kidnapped.
American women serving in the military have broken many barriers in recent years. They can compete these days for positions that once were closed to them. Ms. Howard says her promotion can encourage or help other women gain their career goals in the military. I'm Ana Mateo.
You have been listening to As It Is. Learning English is a part of the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington.
The Agriculture Report is next, followed by Science in the News. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Agriculture Report. The International Committee of the Red Cross is giving seeds and farm equipment to people in the Central African Republic. The ICRC says families who fled rebel clashes in the area need the aid. Without the aid, they may not survive. Other families have returned to their homes, but the clashes have destroyed their farms and grain storage buildings. The clashes began in March 2013, when the mostly Muslim Salika rebel group overthrew the president. The mostly Christian anti-Balaka group then attacked the Salika group. Since then, the ongoing clashes have displaced more than 1 million people in the country. Tens of thousands of others have fled the area. The ICRC aid program targets more than 30 villages in the western part of the country. It will give supplies to more than 13,000 people. Jean-François Sansou leads the ICRC office in the CAR. He says the ICRC is working with the Central African Red Cross to give agricultural aid to people who have been victims of attacks by armed groups since the end of last year. He says their fields were burned and the rebels took everything from their homes. So the ICRC decided to help them plant new crops. The ICRC says each family will get bags of bean, sesame, and corn seeds, as well as farm tools. More than 2.5 million residents already need immediate humanitarian aid. The clashes caused poor harvests in 2013, and the country has little food. The Food and Agricultural Organization reports about 95% of the country's communities say they will not have enough seeds for this year's planting season. Mr. Sansou says the low seed supply could increase the number of people facing hunger. He says people must be helped to return to their homes and begin growing crops. He says he hopes that in 4 or 5 months, people will be able to harvest their crops. Mr. Sansou says as families wait for the crops to grow, the ICRC will work with its partners to give food aid. The organizations will help both those who have returned to their homes and those who remain in the country but cannot go back to their farms. And that's the Agriculture Report from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz.
From VOA Learning English, this is Science in the News. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. Today, we report on concerns that tensions over Crimea and Ukraine may hurt cooperation between Russia and the United States in space exploration. Then, we tell about the effect of the Earth's gravitational pull on the Moon. Finally, we tell about the Hubble Space Telescope and how it has changed the way we look at the universe.
The government in Russia says it may take action against the United States to answer sanctions against Russian officials. The sanctions are meant to punish officials involved in the Russian takeover of Crimea. Russian Deputy Prime Minister Dmitry Rogozin announced in May that the government may re-examine space cooperation between the two countries. If Russia decides to end its partnership with the United States, the decision could affect future space explorations on the International Space Station. The United States wants Russia to agree to continue cooperation on the space station until 2024. Russia now says it may end the partnership by 2020, but the largest and most important joint effort in space does not seem to be threatened.
American astronaut Rick Mastracchio recently returned to Earth after spending more than 6 months in space. He says relations between American and Russian astronauts on the space station are just as good as ever.
The working relationship that we have at the person-to-person level, both on board the space station and even here on the ground, we get along very well with our Russian colleagues, so there's been no problem whatsoever working with them.
Scott Pace is the director of the Space Policy Institute at the George Washington University in Washington, D.C. He says the work and personal relations between the astronauts may not be affected. But he adds that the political environment and the reasons for continuing space cooperation have come under a lot of pressure.
The question is this a temporary state of affairs, or is this a more of a permanent watershed state of affairs, which would call into question the entire range of post-Soviet cooperation that we've had with Russia?
Scott Pace notes that NASA, the American Space Agency, expects to launch the Orion capsule by 2017. The spacecraft will carry astronauts to the space station and even further, without Russian involvement.
Officials know that shrinking public support and reduced budgets for sending human crews to deep space means that international cooperation is necessary. NASA Administrator Charles Bowden Jr. spoke at the Berlin Air and Space Show earlier this year about the future of space exploration. He said NASA understands the importance of cooperation.
And I have to emphasize, there is nothing on this chart that we're doing alone.
For example, the power systems for the Orion capsule are made by European engineers. Much of the spacecraft is being built in Germany. But Russian space officials did not take part in the discussions about Orion. Scott Pace says Russia wants to explore the moon, but may not have the money to do it.
Well, Russia is going to have to make a decision as to what it wants to really be doing in space past 2020.
In May, a Russian Soyuz rocket carried three astronauts to the International Space Station. The three are American astronaut Reid Wiseman, Russian cosmonaut Max Sarayev, and German Alexander Gerst of the European Space Agency. They arrived at the space station 6 hours after launch from the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan. The three will remain in Earth orbit for 6 months. NASA depends on the Russian spacecraft to fly crews to and from the space station.
The gravity of the moon is responsible for the rise and fall of our planet's ocean tides. But researchers have found that the Earth has a similar effect on the moon. NASA scientists say they have been able to see what they call a bulge in the moon caused by Earth's gravitational pull.
Erwan Masuriko is a scientist with the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in Cambridge, Massachusetts. He also works at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland. In a statement, he said, "The deformation of the moon due to Earth's pull is very challenging to measure, but learning more about it gives us clues about the interior of the moon."
NASA scientists say the gravitational effects on both the Earth and moon are very powerful. In their words, the effects are strong enough to stretch them enough so they wind up shaped a little like two eggs with their ends pointing toward one another. We can observe the moon's effect on Earth by watching ocean tides rise and fall. But the effect on the moon is more difficult to see. That is because, except for a small core, or center, the moon is solid, and only one side of the moon can be seen from Earth. Yet scientists say the Earth's gravity is strong enough to create a 51-centimeter-high bulge on both the near and far sides of the moon. NASA officials say the lunar bulge shifts a few inches over time as the Earth moves, like a dance partner following wherever the lead goes.
NASA scientists used information from the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, which has been studying the moon since 2009. They also used information from the Gravity Recovery and Interior Laboratory. That let them see the whole moon, not just the one side that always can be seen from Earth. Researchers used an instrument on the orbiter to measure 350,000 places on the moon's surface. They then compared these measurements to changes in altitude over time to see how the bulge had moved. The study was published in the journal Geophysical Research Letters.
Talking to the moon, trying to get to you.
The Hubble Space Telescope has changed the way we see the universe. For more than 20 years, the telescope has sent large amounts of information and pictures from space. A new exhibit shows much of Hubble's success comes from the ability of space scientists and astronauts to repair and service it in orbit. The show can be seen at the Smithsonian Institution's National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C.
Of the Space Shuttle Discovery with the Hubble Space Telescope, our window on the universe.
The Space Shuttle Discovery carried the Hubble Space Telescope into space in April 1990. Soon after the telescope was deployed, it began to send pictures. but they were not clear. Hubble Space Telescope Program Manager Douglas Broom reported the bad news.
The conclusion we've come to from that is that there's a significant spherical aberration that appears to be present in the optics, in the optical telescope system optics.
This meant part of the telescope's most important mirror was too flat, by about 1/50th the thickness of a human hair. In 1993, a space shuttle crew brought a replacement camera called WIFPIC 2. It also had an instrument with corrected lenses called COSTAR for astronauts to place on the telescope.
The COSTAR inserted mirrors into the optical beam that corrected the light for all the other instruments.
David Dvorkin is with the National Air and Space Museum. He says the repair work was very difficult, but it was successful and showed that shuttle astronauts could complete difficult projects in space.
The whole idea of living and working in space is doing useful stuff, and this certainly was useful. On the astronomical side, and you might say on the technical side, it represents how fast telescopes are improving, because Hubble was only repaired once, but it was upgraded 4 times.
COSTAR and WIFPIC 2 were replaced in 2009. They can now be seen at the museum. Pictures from Hubble have become clearer over time. Information from the telescope has enabled astronomers to look back 14 billion years to the beginning of the universe. And they can see that the universe is growing. David Dvorkin says the telescope led to many other important discoveries.
Understanding star-forming regions, how stars form out of gas and dust, and now the ability of the Hubble to see deeply into the infrared, far deeper than before, has shown us the processes inside these interstellar clouds that literally are forming the stars and their interaction with the dust and gas around them.
Hubble is coming to the end of its life. The James Webb Space Telescope is expected to be launched in 2018. It will have a mirror 5 times larger than Hubble's.
The James Webb is optimized for infrared because all of the most amazing discoveries about galaxy formation, star formation, and the kinds of stuff that astronomers want to know is in the infrared.
Until the James Webb telescope is operational, Hubble continues to work hard and take pictures that surprise and interest scientists and others.
This Science in the News was written and produced by Christopher Cruz. It was based on stories from the VOA News Division and VOA reporters George Pudich and Roseanne Skirbel. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. Join us again next week for more news about science on the Voice of America.